Episode 67 of Talk About That.
Oh, my gosh, know, 67.
Man. You always said we'd never make it past 66.
I did.
It's a weird number for you to
pick. It's a specific...
Yeah, you had a very...
prediction that I had.
Almost like prophetic vision. Well, more like apocalyptic prophetic vision of Talk About That. It was very strange.
I didn't predict our demise. I just predicted we wouldn't make it.
If I remember, there was something about a dragon with three heads was going to take us. I don't know. I think you mixed your theology and what was happening.
Three-headed dragon sounds pretty unwieldy. You know? Like, it sounds terrifying, but it also sounds like, come on, buddy. There's no way that thing's flying straight.
Right. It can't be efficient. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's a...
like a locust person. Is it a tiny person the size of a locust, or is it a giant guy with wings like a locust?
I don't know.
Because would that be more terrifying? A tiny... Have you ever thought about this?
A tiny little guy, like the ant.
Like the locust people in Revelation, are they tiny people?
I don't think that the locusts in Revelation were people. I think they were locusts.
I thought they were locust people.
I don't know, man.
Maybe I've mixed up.
Eschatology is a dish best served. Fill in the blank, listener. I don't know how to say that. So, hey, how you doing, Johnny?
I'm good. I'm sorry. I started out on weird stuff. I've got a weird
I took us there. I think I was the one that
I know, but I've got a weird sense of humor, and sometimes it gets me. Did I ever tell you the story? I just did a thing. Sometimes my weird sense of humor, like I meet somebody and I'll say something really weird just to see if they're kind of on my wavelength.
Right.
And every now and again it's funny, and then they laugh. Like this one guy came in, I was in this church, it was really, really like, you know, green pews and it was like Second Baptist Church. It was like a typical what you would expect a Baptist church in, you know, Arkansas. So I go into this thing and I get there early and the guy's like, oh, well, just anything you need. And I was sitting at my table. And then the senior pastor came over because the guy I'd met was like the whatever pastor, teaching pastor. And the senior pastor goes, hey, I'm senior pastor, Bob, you know, Bob Watson, whatever his name was. And I go, oh, hi, Pastor Bob. It's so great to meet you. And then... later on, the other guy who had helped me set up came back over, and he saw me talking to Pastor Bob, and he goes, oh, I see you've met Pastor Bob. I said, this is our senior pastor. I go, he actually told me that I could be the senior pastor now. And then the guy goes, really? And then Pastor Bob like saw that I was just being silly, and he laughed. I was like, okay, thank God. Because sometimes I'll do stuff like that. People are like, duh, they don't understand.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny that you're like, oh, this is our senior. Really? He told me that he's retiring and I could be the.
And you're out.
But sometimes it doesn't work at all. Okay, here's something I've done two times, and both times it fell flat.
I love that you did it again.
I did it. I had to try it again to make sure I wasn't like, am I wrong? Is this not funny?
It still could just be that lightning did not strike twice.
Okay, so 2010, New Year's Eve.
You remember the date.
I'd been doing comedy a year and a half. I get invited to Wichita, Kansas for New Year's Eve for this late night thing. So I go do it, and I get there early that day, and they go, well, hey, the guy that was bringing me in, hey, you go take a nap in the hotel because I know you've been flying all day. We'll come get you because you're not going on until later tonight. It'd be like 9 or 10 o'clock tonight. Oh, great. So I go. I lay down. I wake up, and I've set my alarm, and there was a text message from this guy, and it said, and then by the way, we had had lunch, and he was another, like, I think he was a wannabe comic. He was like on pastoral staff there, but he wanted to be a comic, so he was going to open the show.
I hate those kinds of people.
So, right. Pretenders. So he sends me a text, and again, I'm half awake. He sends me a text. Hey, somebody will be there to get you. And I guess he was saying it's not going to be me. So he's like, he'll be driving a red Cutlass. And so.
Well, I feel like this is like a. This is like a create your own ending. Like I should insert what I think you did there.
Right.
I'm going to guess that what you did.
I said.
I'll be the guy with the red rose.
I said. I said, I'll be wearing a red carnation.
Carnation.
No cops or the girl dies.
Oh, that's what, oh my gosh.
And then I just waited for the ha-ha.
And you got nothing.
I got nothing. And so. And it was like another hour before that guy picked me up. And I was like, oh, no, I got to go perform for these people. Does he think I'm serious? I don't have a hostage. And so I get there. And there's a bunch of people. You know, it's a big event. And then right before I went on, I go, hey, did you get my text? He goes, yeah, I got it. I go, why? You know, I was just being silly. He goes, yeah, yeah. That was it. He never like was like, oh, you comedians.
Oh, wow.
He was just like, yeah.
You went too far.
I don't know if it offended him. I just think, I don't know. Maybe he just is like, oh, I get that kind of stuff all the time from my friend Ricky. Maybe he's got that kind of a,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I think I tried it again with somebody else, and it didn't go. It wasn't that they didn't respond. It was just like I had to follow up later and go, what? You know.
Maybe. And again, kidnapping is a serious thing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that.
But see, when you don't say ha-ha, now the NSA really does have a threat.
Right. You just made
of me
a watch
just
list.
Putting something out in the universe. Whereas if you go, hey, my comedian friend who I know is just making a dumb joke.
Yeah.
It's just something people say in movies, no cops or I kill a hostage or whatever.
Right. You're not explaining it.
I don't have a...
Right. Do you not go watch those movies? Do you walk out like, how dare they give a dramatic interpretation?
It's just
of what...
a funny thing to say. I'll be there and I'll be driving this. And it just leads me to those.
It's like a spy thing.
Yeah. Come alone.
Yeah. Yeah. If you just would have said something about the girl, that would have been weird.
Bring the cash.
The carnation sets it off.
I should have said die. Bring the cash. No cops. Nope. Maybe he'd have been like, oh.
Yeah, leave out. Maybe you should do
bring
this again.
Bring out the murder part.
Yeah, take out the murder. Let's try it again. I want you to try it again.
No.
I don't think I can
try it again.
The funniest things do come in odd numbers, so we need to find a third thing still.
Yeah.
Wait, you already had three, didn't you?
Yeah.
Carnation. No cops. And
I could try it. I guess I have a show coming up. I could try it, but I'd have to set it up. Like, hey, can you send somebody to pick me up? So it'd be like I was setting it up.
Hey, do you care if I go to the hotel? Johnny, you're on in an hour. Yeah, but I need to go take a nap. And you need to send somebody.
But you have a rental car. I don't care.
Just do it.
I put it in my rider from now on. There needs to be somebody to pick me up. And they need to text me what they're driving until I get this joke right.
I don't know, man.
That's so dumb.
I don't know. I think it has. You know, you were. You know, we had the 4th of July this week.
I did. We did.
You had your own.
I
apparently.
Yeah. What did you do? What did the family do?
The family. We had so in our
neighborhood fireworks.
In our neighborhood, there's a house about three doors down that puts on like almost city level.
Yeah.
Fireworks. Like, it's big, and they invite a bunch. Of course, it rained a lot yesterday.
Right.
But it cleared off by the evening, so we had some friends over. I invited you, by the way.
You did.
And
I'm sorry.
You didn't come. And it's okay. It's okay. Usually you're out of town. You happen to be home this year, but...
Yeah.
And so, anywho, once the rain passed, you know... So my buddy, actually, Matt, has one of those small Nintendos that has every Nintendo game ever made. Have you seen
these? Yeah, I've got one.
Yeah. Oh, you got one of those, yeah.
I don't have every one. I think mine has like 40 on it, but
no, he's probably 190 or something.
He's got the good one.
Yeah. So we played. Did I play Mike Tyson's Punch Out?
Yeah.
So me and a couple of the guys, you know, we hung out and did that while the storms and we ate a lot. So that was good.
That's America.
Yeah, we ate for our independence, and then finally the weather cleared enough the kids could swim and everything, so they swam, and then we watched fireworks and did sparklers and all.
I saw a guy, speaking of That's America, I saw a comedian talking about, and I can't believe nobody ever gone here before. It's just such a funny premise. They talked about how, to show the British how mad we were at the tax on tea, we dumped all the tea into the harbor.
Right.
He's like, what does that do? It just makes more tea. I just think that's just so funny. Now the whole harbor's tea. You think these British people are mad? No. They got tea anytime they want it now.
Well, that's great. That's great.
But you watched the fireworks, of course. You didn't. Please tell me you didn't film them. I made a post about that. But stop filming the fireworks. I don't want to be that guy that's the curmudgeon. But nobody ever watches these.
You know, I almost tweeted at you.
Nobody cares
curmudgeon much or something like that.
Nobody cares about your dumb 20-second fire. They're all the same.
You had a very like sit at home and shout to the heavens.
Well, my dog Toby freaks out from every. Sound. So it was thundering first. He's just huddled. And he's an 80, 90 pound dog.
Yeah.
So he's climbing onto me.
Yeah.
And he's a totally like, normally not that way. He's a pit mix, lab pit mix. So he normally just goes, he'll come see you and then he'll go off to himself. But when it is thundering or when there are fireworks, he is like in your business because he's scared.
Yeah.
He doesn't cry. He's just, you can feel his heart beating. And he was terrified the whole day. So that's one of the reasons I stayed home, because I was like, I don't want to just leave him here to shake in the corner.
Yeah, Brutus is freaking out. He's pretty much deaf, but during the fireworks,
he feels vibrations. Yeah. He's like, it's World War III out there. Why is anybody concerned? Everybody's eating hot dogs.
But he's 9.1 pounds.
Yeah.
So it's not that big of a deal.
It doesn't. It's different.
Here, buddy. Here, I'll hold
yeah,
one
Toby
hand.
Was on me, man. It was, there was no going anywhere. But, you know, it was fine. But you, I'm glad you had a good time, John.
I did. I had a good time. We had a good time. We had some good conversations yesterday. And you tweeted something, though, speaking of jokes that people may not always
get. I didn't just
post
the curmudgeon thing. I posted a little snarky thing. I've posted it more than once. Under many administrations, just so anybody's checking.
Right.
I always post, like, I'm so glad we escaped England over 200 years ago to start our own country, one that is without unfair taxes and corrupt leaders. And it's just a funny, dumb, like, thing to say.
Yeah.
I think America can take it.
Yeah.
And the other thing we've talked about before is, like, America's got kind of an Israel thing. We're not Israel in prophecy, but we have a similar thing of we didn't want a king. We wanted our own thing. We had our own thing. But then slowly but surely, we've kind of morphed into where our leaders have had more and more carte blanche power. Mm-hmm. And we've ceded that power out of convenience, or they say they're going to protect us from the bad things in the world, a la the Patriot Act. And so out of fear, we've kind of ceded some of our liberty. And I just think it's kind of almost like we're heading back towards having a king. And I think this is just funny that we left because we didn't want this, and now we've kind of accepted certain things.
Well, I mean, there's certainly we can't have a king.
I know we can't have a king, but
something goes horribly wrong.
We've let ourselves, we've let our guard down in some ways, as far as giving up some of our freedoms. And I think it's just a conversation worth having, but it wasn't like I was like, let me start the fires on. It was just kind of a funny, snarky thing to say.
Sure.
Because it's like, you know, we have a conversation about American exceptionalism and how important it is for some people that America's number one and we're never going to have an argument about it. And only in America could X happen. And we just grow up believing that. And, you know, I think that there's a lot to that. I think I love that I was born an American. I'm very proud to be an American, and I root for all of that. When I win the Olympics, I root for the, you know what I'm saying? Even though I know these borders are very arbitrary and all of that stuff, it's just something that happens. It puts a lump in your throat when the American soccer team wins or whatever.
Right.
But some of that's ingrained in us, and I just think it's important to, like, dissect it every now and again instead of just being like, okay, I'm just going to just go with this. Start thinking about, okay, well, if America's so great, is it okay to address her flaws? Can she handle that?
No, absolutely. I think the gospel itself calls us to honesty, authenticity, and to not into confession.
Right.
You know. So I think that's where our faith should meet our citizenship.
Yeah.
Is there? And I think that the founding fathers, you know. And this is a great conversation to have, and that's I'll begin with this. I was actually reading a church history book today, and it was talking about the reasons in the first, second, third centuries, and sort of the process by which Christians became more and more persecuted.
Yeah,
and why that happened, you know, and one of the things was the adaptation of the Roman Empire to Caesar worship.
Okay.
So in the beginning, and I forget which Caesar he quotes, but one of the early guys in like 60, somewhere around there, he didn't want the people worshiping the Caesar because the Republic felt this, you know, it would be dishonorable to his fellow man. That was the quote of the emperor.
Yeah.
That, hey, you know, that's not what we should do. But the empire grew so vast, and it covered so many different religions, so many different languages, and so much such a span, that there was no common, like, what's going to be the common thing that makes everybody come together?
Yeah.
And eventually it just kind of morphed into, well, at first it was Rome, Pax Romana, the peace of Rome,
right?
Meaning that if you lived in this place, even Paul, you know, would cite his own Roman citizenship when it behooved him or when it benefited him in a situation. And so having, you know, being under Rome's control, besides the Jews, you know, they were always the exception. But most everybody else, there was this feeling that over time, you know, you were going to like that. That was going to be the good thing for you because you had it was just a different kind of government that didn't exist elsewhere. And so, again, obviously, historically, Johnny, at first, if you were conquered or enslaved, I mean, I'm just saying over generations that they kind of all melded together and you became almost native to Rome. And so eventually, though, that idea of Rome being the thing, and they had all of this spirituality that went along with it. Eventually, the only way that could have like a personification was that the Emperor Caesar himself must embody all of those spiritual ideals that Rome itself has. So over time, over about 200 years, it went from, you know, hey, Rome is a great idea. Here's the Republic. To okay, we're growing, we're big, we're vast. There's all these differentiating ideas, you know. But Rome itself, peace of Rome, all those things. To the emperor is the embodiment of that, and so Caesar worship was completely. In fact, even the author goes into all the things for a Christian that would have been difficult because they were when you read old Roman coins and they find old things that talk about the way that they would speak of Caesar, it was very, very similar. Caesar is Lord. In fact, that was a thing they required at one point of all citizens. You had to come to the temple and you had to burn a small amount of incense and you had to say Caesar is Lord because that was how you reaffirmed your citizenship and the fact that you were loyal to Rome. Well, I mean, the Christians, their religion, now the Jews would never do that, but it was okay. The Romans would allow the Jews not to do it because it was ethnic, you know, because they weren't going to make you change your ethnicity per se. So, but the Christians, it wasn't ethnic. They were people who were all doing the same thing a couple months ago. We were proclaiming other gods and all these things, and now we refuse to.
Yeah.
And so they were looked at as revolutionaries after a while, or at least the threat of revolutionaries. And because it was, I mean, when he went through, it wasn't more than just Caesar as Lord. They were theological statements that you could have substituted Jesus and Caesar for them in the early church because it was all one. It was coming out of the same time period, you know. And so it was just a fascinating idea of, and I do believe in the American president in particular. And I've read several books about American presidencies lately throughout history that the early founding fathers, and to your point about, you were saying this off the air before we started, like, do you really think that this is what they intended, you know, in terms of executive power and all of those things?
Right.
And the answer is yes and no, in my opinion.
Right, depending on the person, they might have been like, hey, I'll be a king by another name.
Well, and again, there's a lot of people that wanted George Washington to be the king.
Yeah.
He would have been called
once we got over here. Once we got over here and we were away from them, they're like, all right, let's just set up shop the way it was now, but you'll be the good king.
Right, you're the good King George.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was the bad King George. And so it's such a...
And he knew enough not to do it.
Right. He set a precedent, but it wasn't necessarily going to happen that way. I mean, if he would have stayed in for 20 years, and he could have, then there's no telling what the American presidency would look like.
Yeah, if he hadn't done the term limit thing.
But he created... Because it wasn't, I think, into the 25th Amendment or whatever, after FDR, that actually became, you know, a now rule of law. You can't serve more than two
years. I was asking you, when did... Because we're talking about unfair taxes. I think... That's the interesting thing is I had people from the left and the right commenting, you know, or liking or putting faces. And I thought it was pretty balanced because even people who are on the far right, they at least believe that they're taxed unfairly.
Yeah.
Or that they're at least taxed confusingly.
Yeah.
The tax code is meant to be cryptic and it's always changing and we can sneak this in on you. And now all of a sudden, I mean, we live in an area that's grown. Mount Juliet, you live in Mount Juliet, I live in Lebanon, and Wilson County has grown, and so there are people who own their property who are now paying double property taxes because of a property that's grown, a property they already own.
Right.
And so there are all people who think that's really super unfair, and it's tyranny, even, if you want to get libertarian about it. And so even people on the right could get behind that, and then when I say corrupt leadership, they immediately assume that I'm attacking Trump. But honestly, I was asking you before the thing, like, when did lobbyists get into the mix where I can just be in the pocket of the NRA, and guess what? I'm never going to vote any gun legislation, and no matter how reasonable and common sense it is. Or I can be in the pocket of the abortion lobby, and all of a sudden now, anytime Planned Parenthood is at stake, I'm going to make sure I vote their way. Like, when did that all happen? Do you even know?
I think it was late 19th, early 20th centuries when they became predominant. In my best recollection, like we've been watching a Ken Burns documentary on prohibition, which is just fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you talk about.
An overreaction and religion and government getting
power.
Mixed in.
Yeah. You have this temperance movement, mm-hmm. you know, coming out of the Second Great Awakening. Although I want to come back to that because I don't want to forget your question. But so that's a fascinating thing for us to talk about. But around that time, you have these leagues and these movements that, and they're also they're tied in as well with women's suffrage, because they're beginning now to march and to, you know, try to influence legislation. They're writing to the presidents, they're writing to the congressmen. You also have in the middle of that civil rights that's beginning, though it's being tamped down a lot. So between prohibition, women's rights being tied to that, and it would take 40 years you know, for all that to really come to play. But I think it became a thing that we would call, again, the dirty word for it all is special interests.
Yeah.
But everybody's own interests feel special to them.
Yeah.
That's our country. You know, our country has turned way more into a one-issue voting population now.
Yeah.
That, and again, I'm just going to call some things. We were talking about this yesterday. We were talking about it. We were talking about how, like, we're one-issue voters in that people will, and I get it. I have issues, I mean, that are very, very important to me.
You've got issues, John.
I do have a lot of issues. But it has people, though, especially the abortion question.
Mm-hmm.
People will vote only on that, and that's the thing everybody campaigns on left and right,
because they know that
so divided.
It's,
if I can, no matter what else I say, I know you'll not. If you're pro-choice, you're not going to vote pro-life, and vice versa.
Right.
And so the thing that gets me in that, and maybe it's just the gridlock of government, that some of the gridlock of government is to our advantage. That's why we have stability to some extent.
Yeah.
But, you know, conservatively and liberally, like, we had multiple presidents, including Ronald Reagan, who did not overturn in his administration, and not that the president can't overturn Supreme Court law. Yeah. But
he didn't make it a huge part of his platform.
I mean, whether he did or not, it wasn't just able to push it through.
Yeah.
But you got Reagan, Bush Sr., W., now Trump, and they, and so many of them, especially in the latter years, campaigned on the idea of, you know, I'm going to change this abortion issue in America. And the same thing on the liberal side and on the Democratic side, that they, and I guess to them, they did keep their promise, but all they had to do is keep the status quo in terms of what the law allows. Now, I know the states are attempting right now to bring things to the Supreme Court that possibly will allow. Yeah. And I know that the justices are a big reason why. That was one of the main things that the conservative candidates
all these
were saying,
justices were getting older. And
right. If you let me in, I'll make sure a conservative justice comes in. You know. Mm-hmm. So, but you still can't help but feel sometimes like we're electing people based off of these one issues. And for the most part, most of those issues have not changed in 40 years from a legal standpoint. And I understand how the court system works. And maybe that's just that's the way that it works. But in that way, though, I wish they would not promise. Like, stop promising that you're going to – and it's not just abortion, but this idea – we need to keep fighting for the right things. I get that. But
well, I think didn't Obama promise he would close Gitmo? That was one of his huge things, and he didn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it was and not a lot of people called him on it. But, I mean, that was his promise during one of his campaign things. It's like, well, one of the first things I'll do is I'll close Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
Because this atrocity had happened there where we had, you know, improperly tortured. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he was like, well, that won't go on or whatever. And then, he did
change, if I remember. He changed it a lot.
Yeah,
it's
interesting.
He got rid of most of the people.
Obama was more of a hawk than people remember, though. There were more drone strikes under Obama than even, you know, this current president. It's like there were tons of like just crazy indiscriminate like drone strikes. And I guess he was playing with that technology and some of that didn't get out. And then I was It's interesting. I was reading the other day that, like, deportations under Obama were startlingly high.
Yeah.
So this idea that, like, if we got a Democrat in there, we would just let everybody in. It's like, not necessarily, bro.
Well, and I read a...
It's just that it's like people don't call a Democrat out on a tough immigration policy for some reason. It's just because of our deeply entrenched politics.
Yeah, we politicize. Yeah. Everything gets so politicized that we no longer are
We're
looking.
Assuming that the right is the party of no.
Yeah.
And stay out. And we hate brown people. And then when you got somebody who is a sitting black president, and he's the guy who's like, no, get him out. And he deports, like, I mean, he deported thousands and thousands of people. Yeah. And it was the most by any president, by like 400% is what I read. And then you just go, and he just got a pass on it. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just, it's interesting the way we politicize.
I would like to see I read an article the other day about why the crisis is at its compared to the times before in the modern era, why is it like this? And the biggest variable, and it may be something to think of even with Obama, is that the number of people seeking asylum has gone up like 1,000%.
Right.
It has to do with the unrest and
everywhere
and
else.
The gang violence, especially in the cities, and people are fleeing by the hundreds of thousands because it's literally now the drug lords have taken over.
Yeah.
They've taken over the governments. They've taken over everything. And prostitution, they'll force your daughter into prostitution. They'll force the men into being in the gangs. And so some of them feel no other recourse but to escape. And that increase in violence is caused now. So he may have deported more because – percentage-wise, so much more had come across the border, you know, and so I wouldn't mind seeing those numbers. Like.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm speaking from an article I read months ago, but I don't know. That's the thing is, like, it's not illegal to seek asylum here. I think people need to get that in their head that, like, if somebody's trying to seek asylum and they're coming to the border and they're trying to, and, you know, it's a hard issue. It really is hard. But it is fascinating, and there's lobbyists on sides of there, too. I mean, that's the thing. Is like there's lobbyists about this issue.
Yeah.
Because people benefit one way or another because of this stuff. It's so weird. And I think about it every time I go fly, that I got to take my shoes off and I got to do these certain things because we want to be as convenient as we can, and then we're convinced that we're under threat. Mm-hmm. And so we let ourselves have this or this stripped away. And I'm not saying it's a big deal for I have to take my shoes off. But it is interesting. You know, we got one guy, you know, umpteen years ago that had a shoe bomb. And now it's like, we're going to check everybody's shoes until forever.
Yeah.
And so it's like one person really can ruin it for everybody. And I don't think that's really how it was set up.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in terms of...
I don't like taking my shoes off, John. They stink.
I see that, yeah. We don't like taking your shoes off.
I got my own kind of shoe bomb.
You know, back to your border detainee situation, you know, I think what bothers me on social media, and I understand, and I always have, I feel like I'm slow. I feel like I'm very slow to make decisions, and because the conflicting reports from reputable sources are so many that I get real frustrated. Part of this is my Enneagram 6. I get real frustrated with all the information when literally this outlet is saying, and I'm talking these are people who are they do this for a living. I'm not talking just social media.
Yeah.
This news outlet is saying, no, it's not that way. This congressman is saying, no, it's not that way. And this congressman and this news outlet is saying, yes,
it's a concentration camp.
Right. And you go, okay, guys, literally you're both elected.
I want to know whether to be outraged about this.
Yeah, you're
or how outraged.
Or if I'm outraged about it and then I find out that, oh, that was all somebody doctored a bunch of pictures or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? But here's the deal. I want to at least say this, and I think that this is – I think this is a gospel viewpoint. You and I have been to Cochabamba, Bolivia multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
In Cochabamba, Bolivia, when we were there, that law, I believe, has changed. That the women's prison, when the women were incarcerated, the children went with them.
Yeah.
The children weren't incarcerated, but they lived in the prison. And they could come and go during the day, but they slept in cells. They didn't have beds and all those things. It was like an open courtyard, and you only had what your family, whoever would visit you.
We went into one of them, didn't we?
I went into multiple times.
I remember that, yeah.
And so it was like a big shanty town almost in the middle of it. And you had to pay money if you wanted to sell on the out in the outside wall. And so, of course, prostitution was huge. Men would come to the prison, pay money to the women inside so that they could afford. I mean, it was a horrible thing. And children are being abused, living in horrible. And the first time we went there, we were serving food and to kids and giving them stuff. And it was just gut-wrenching and heartbreaking. And we were just absolutely appalled that the Bolivian government would allow that to go on. And I'm sure somewhere in the Bolivian government, someone's saying something like, we don't have the money in the social service system to care for every child whose parent commits a crime and goes to prison. Like, they had a reasoning probably somewhere. It wasn't just like, I doubt if you would have asked them, they would have said, we hate our own children.
Yeah.
But the American kind of judgment of other countries is you just hate your own children.
Right.
You know,
that's part of American exceptionalism where it gets dangerous, is where we're like, I'm everywhere, but that's not us, is a third world country or whatever, or developing country. And that's one of the reasons it's so important to go travel.
Yeah.
Like, get out and go see that, like, oh, wow, this is, you know.
And so I've seen to this thing, regardless, if what has been said is happening to children, then as a believer, I mean, forget my citizenship for a moment. It comes second to me being a believer. I love my citizenship.
Yeah.
But as a believer, innocent children being treated in such a manner, it cannot stand on my watch without me being prayerful, active, and saying that should not happen. As much as I didn't let it stand on my watch when I thought it was happening in Bolivia.
Yeah.
You know? And so I see people on social media saying, well, this isn't our fault. You know, this isn't our fault that people are, it's not our fault that there's unrest in South America.
It's our doorstep now. Right.
And this is going to bankrupt us and all those things. And that's when I say, hey, I understand. And even this is the one that gets me even worse. And I know what they're saying. But hey, we're not even caring for our own children in our own system and all those things. And to which I say, well, then let's rise up and deal with that issue too. Let's not just say because we're not dealing with this one, we should ignore these people in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like we give ourselves this weird, really strange ethical pass.
Yeah.
That is basically saying, well, if this thing's really bad, then I'm okay with this thing being really bad, instead of us saying, hey, guys, we shouldn't be okay with either one being bad. Like, if you knew about that happening to our citizens' children in this country, then let's reform that as well. Now, I understand that we have limited resources and all those things, but that's where I want to say, hey, none of it's okay.
I'm tired of hearing we have limited resources and then hearing the president reference a space force, too.
Yeah. Well, and again, now you're really getting into the...
It's just so weird, man. It's like, we don't have money, to blah, 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 and then let's roll tanks down the street and talk about space force. It's like... All right, guys, let's take care of people. Take care of people?
And I think we got to say this. Money does not fix everything. It really, really does not. And we do have, I believe, the best social services system in the world. I mean, I have friends who are social workers. We ourselves as the church, you know, we kind of come in and out of that world when somebody's in trouble, you know. And I think that churches and I think that nonprofits in this country do – an amazing amount of good, both financially, but also actually caring and having empathy and compassion and knowing someone's name and not just trying. You know, I think that that's a part of American idealism, is the belief that somewhere across the board, if we just throw money and everything, we can fix the social woes of the world.
No, I don't believe that.
And we cannot. I mean, again, you worked in mental health. Like,
it's tough. Yeah. And it's tough working in it. It just cannibalizes people. Yeah. I mean, those people you're talking about that you know, I mean, they're constantly burned out.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible for them.
They love it, and they love that they're making a difference. But sometimes they ask, are we making a difference? All the time. They question it. And it's hard. Because it's like you're just trying to help one person at a time, one person at a time, one person. It's like the need is so great.
Well, and I think that – and I want to define something that I've – reading lately, I think.
I want to know why you're in the pocket of Space Force. Who –
I just believe it's the answer, Johnny.
Did that silver medal that you have come from somewhere else, John?
Johnny, I'm just going to say this. I may take money from special interests.
And I'm going to Mars
next
year.
I'm in the space pocket. I'll see you. No, I think that we use that word exceptionalism. And,
yeah.
And what I'm reading, here's the deal. American exceptionalism was a thing to the founding fathers, but I don't think it's the same. It wasn't the same thing to them that it is to us.
Yeah.
Like the founding fathers, you're George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, okay? First four presidents all involved somewhere in revolution / Declaration of Independence / Constitution / Articles of Confederation before the Constitution / Bill of Rights /
the guitar player for Guns N' Roses.
Thank you. I'm glad that that's my favorite joke you tell all the time.
That's so stupid.
So it is dumb. And so these guys, if you really read the writings, they believed America was exceptional, not out of some intrinsic, inherent, we're better kind of thing just because, like out of our nature and our essence.
Right.
American exceptionalism today is almost like in our essence, we're better than others. They didn't believe that.
They thought America was a great idea.
There you go. What they really knew was exceptional was that they were trying something that no one else in history, and they were all students of government. They were students of Plato and Socrates and Rome and Greece, Athens, all like they were studying an amazing amount. I mean, daily, if you read what they're doing and what they're reading, these guys weren't just sitting around going, you know, be a good idea. I tell you what, like these guys We're debating on a level, on a philosophical,
you don't think they could do it with that accent that you just said?
I don't know,
you don't
man.
Think someone could debate on a philosophical level?
I'm going to tell you right now what that Socrates, that Socrates.
When? In the course of human events. That was a little Ross Perot.
That was Ross Perot.
It was.
We
can I finish?
And so what they thought was exceptional was, and they took it, there was a humility about it. Like, that's why there was such debate and discourse. That's why it took 10 years to have the Constitution.
It was about service. It was about, you know,
And John Adams and Thomas Jefferson didn't agree with each other on most all of it, even though they were friends and then enemies for a long time and became friends at the end
of their
life.
Quincy Adams? What was his deal?
It's fascinating. He was the only other besides George W. Bush son of a president.
John Quincy.
But again, these are great thinkers, whether you agree with their thoughts or not.
Yeah.
They were great thinkers. So you're right. What they felt was exceptional was the opportunity to do something different. And it was all about balance of power above all else. But they even appealed to higher power. These guys weren't what we would call, you know, Thomas Jefferson in particular. There's all kinds of stuff written about it. And it's true that he had a Bible where he removed the miraculous parts and all those things.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, that he didn't buy into the supernatural side of those things.
He was more of a deist is what I've heard. A lot of the founding fathers were deists. They believe kind of God wound the watch.
Yep.
He built it. And then he just let the watch go. And now, like, whatever happens, happens.
Right.
And he doesn't interfere necessarily. He doesn't intervene.
Quite honestly, how a lot of works-based Christians, I think I live my life like that a lot. Except throwing a whole lot of guilt, almost like a stereotypically
He wound the watch,
Catholic.
And then he makes you feel bad for being the watch.
Right. Now I should feel bad and wonder if he's going to just reject me at any moment in time.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of that. I need to work hard to keep his approval, you know. But they weren't all – I mean, some of the guys I think we say founding fathers like they're one group. I think founding fathers were also the epicenter of political parties. Like, they were actually – like, Alexander Hamilton died in a duel with Aaron Burr. Like, he was hated by half of America, as was Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. They weren't you know, friends. They were enemies. But they were both founding fathers. So, I mean, I think we got to remember that some of that – now, George Washington and Jefferson, those guys, they didn't like the idea of political parties, but it's like it couldn't help but happen.
So you're saying 100 years from now, my legacy could be looked upon better than it is now, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though half of America may not hate me.
Well, American
may hate me, but may not even know me.
they may hate you right now, and it could be higher.
But
I'm
then,
working on the stat. I've actually
– it's high 60s.
I've actually taken a little straw poll.
But I got a chance to turn it around once people realize I was on the right side of history.
If somebody will rewrite your history with an exceptional viewpoint, then yes, it's possible
but
we could say.
Even though
Johnny sounded dumb in his own time, what we realize now is.
But to wrap it up, the whole point of what I tweeted and put on Facebook was to exactly what you said. America started out as this great idea. Let's leave because we don't need this. And then we got to make sure we're holding to the idea of America rather than just thinking, because we're America, things are going to work out, and we're never going to want to give up our freedoms, and we're never going to just settle for a random tax increase that has, makes no sense,
right?
That's unfair, or we're going, you know what I'm saying? It's just, it's easy to settle for that stuff when you just think that America is this watch that we wound back to deism, that the founding fathers said it,
right?
And they forgot it, and we don't have to do anything. We don't need to intervene as a people.
That's good. Yeah.
And the truth is, we have to constantly be intervening.
Yeah, the idea was, the idea of America was that.
Right, checks and balances.
We would be intervening the whole time. And that good men and women would continue.
Yeah.
It was built upon men and women being willing to share power and not need it for themselves like the gentry and the elite had done before them.
God, the gentry.
Yeah.
Those people.
That the landowners and property. Now, even though, again, I understand, listener, this is, we don't have time. I understand listeners may be thinking, oh my gosh, yeah, but it was all made for the landowner. The women didn't have the vote. African Americans are 3/5 of a person in the Constitution.
Right.
You know, we have.
And you kept them both uneducated enough to where they couldn't, you know what I'm saying?
Like
the system was wired against them.
Native Americans are referred to as savages and consistently break every treaty with them that we have and move them out of the lands where we can use the resources greater to other places and keep them in systemic poverty for hundreds of years. Like, America, as the idea, had an exception from a European standpoint, mm-hmm. and it certainly was still for mostly white males. So it was not an exceptional ideal for – if you were a black person in America, especially in the South, and now there were free men and other people in the North. But if you were a woman, if you were a minority, if you were not a landholder even, mm-hmm. there was a good chance – that it wasn't exceptional for you,
yeah.
but it would have been better possibly, not for the slave and not for the Indian necessarily, but for the poor white, it was better than anything that ever existed in the world,
right.
They have rights and all those things. So in that particular case, that's why I think when we say, hey, let's make America great again, you have to ask the question, for who?
Right.
Or for whom, sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, my bad. Like, okay. I agree America is amazing and great, but I think this comes – for me, this sums it all up, like, because I hate getting political, but I do like being historical. I am not expecting – and I think this is where the follower of Jesus probably can find peace. I am not expecting my government or a political system or a president – and by the way, the founding fathers are very conflicted on the power of the executive and what it should be. Thomas Jefferson did not want a president. And that's why he didn't want a governor of the states.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while Alexander Hamilton wanted basically just below. They wanted to call the president your highness.
Yeah.
When you announced him, there's all these things about what are we going to announce.
What did
him
Jefferson
as?
Want? Just like a show of hands every time they wanted to vote for something. Yeah. Let me get a show of hands exactly. on who Jefferson wants to buy wanted Louisiana.
Very much a more direct democracy. You're exactly right. And so he conceded eventually that the Senate would represent the more upper. Educated, there had to be somebody who was philosophical, educated,
yeah.
who wasn't working with his hands all day, who was reading the books, but that was his work. He was going to read the books all day, and he was going to understand where government can go awry, so that we weren't just going to, you know, because populism, again, they wanted to avoid what eventually became Jefferson was so key, by the way, in the French Revolution.
Yeah.
He loved it. He loved the idea that the people would just rise and rule. And it was like the bloodiest revolution ever.
And they're
just beheading people in the
and
streets.
And it's not changed a bit, John. Now we have a president, like we always have, who read all the books.
I can't. I'm not going to make any political statements here today.
Okay, go ahead.
So, but that idea, though, for the Christian is that if I really do expect a nation to bring what only the kingdom of God
is, America's
and
not
will
your
be,
savior.
Yeah, it just can't. It can't. And anytime I mix it, I can say as a history teacher, I can say as a citizen, I can say as one who votes, I can say as one who pays taxes, and I can say as one who tries to study and who loves my country, that what a blessing that God has allowed this nation to give us these human freedoms for as long as we have. For some of us, and that for some of us, we have a system that allows us to add the proper freedoms to those who've been disenfranchised all these years. That's a blessing that the system is elastic enough that it can change and breathe if we're willing to be good people who arise up and say, hey, it's time.
Right. The freedom to criticize the system. This podcast is an example of that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
The Gestapo is not going to bust in
right,
here.
Right, they're not going to kick in the door because we don't have enough listeners. But no.
They're never going to hear
it. They're never going to hear this. No, I think it's interesting. Adelaide Stevenson, I think, said the definition of freedom is when it's safe to be unpopular.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. Like, you can be unpopular, but if it's dangerous to be unpopular, that's when you know you're in trouble. And we don't really... We don't feel that in America like they do in other countries. There are people who would say, hey, hold on. I got audited under Obama. I was a nonprofit, and I have right-wing leanings, and I was audited. That was a big scandal under Obama. And then we talked about that, how I think the government has a mute button. There's windowless vans heading out to whatever. There's blogs being shut down. That's when it gets dangerous to me, is when we let people say, because what the president says has power. It's this rhetoric is very powerful now because social media it goes out to billions of people. And so, you know, if the president says, for instance, like these journalists are acting treasonously, that's a really interesting thing for the president to say. You're accusing somebody who's printing a story on you because it is unflattering of treason. That's something a president would not have done. So I think that's why I say,
especially when the Bill of Rights gives us the freedom of the press, is like in the first three.
It's like huge. It's
they get a right to write their opinion.
Yeah. So we're saying, oh, I don't like that he wrote that.
I understand libel and slander. I understand that. But if that's what the American political system has always been built upon, a press that was against somebody.
Well, and even satire, where you just do print a lie because you're trying to prove the point of the other side. You know, that's even protected.
And if somebody's being libelous, take them to court. That's your recourse. Yeah. You know, if you don't, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting though. But so the idea that like we're here, and even from late George W. with the Patriot Act, then you got Obama. He signs the most executive orders of any sitting president. And now you just see, that's what I was pointing out, is like, let's not let the idea of America go, because it's important that we stay involved. When instead of being like, well, all we have to do is just say that it's great and it'll be great. By the way, did you see my poster I'd seen it before maybe, but it was Washington wearing one of those red hats. The Trump hats, but it just says Make America.
That's great.
That's pretty clever.
That's great.
He made America, John.
He did. No, and it's a fascinating – one of the things I love about history is – and even recent history, I love that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were like political enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And you understand something. This is going to be a great tie to what happens later in history. John Adams was a one-term president. He lost to Thomas Jefferson. So he didn't get his second term, and it was like this heartbreaking, horrible thing to him. And he went in – he was a very, like, depressive type guy already, like very critical of himself, very insecure about his own appearance, all those things, you know.
I can relate to this dude.
Jefferson's like so gentle and genteel is the right word, that at every – everybody thought they were Jefferson's best friend.
Yeah.
Thing, you know. And so he always had everything's going to be okay. He had this this great outlook on life and always, I mean, exceptionalism. He wanted America to be a nation of farmers because he believed in this agrarian yeoman existence was going to be, you could be happy living off your land. And he's a Southerner and, you know, all those things. So, and, you know, Adams believes everybody should be learning all the government. He's an attorney, you know, and all these things. So there's like this thing, they hated each other, and at the end of their life they start writing these letters, which is why we know about it, because everybody wrote back then.
Yeah.
And they exchanged letters for years and years and years on end and became close friends again, and then died on the same day. That's the great story. And
wow.
I think it was Jefferson's final
words. Murder-suicide.
Jefferson's final jeez. Well, Jefferson's final words were like, Adams survives, I think is what it was. Or was it Jefferson's – or was it Adams saying Jefferson survives? Whatever it was, the other one actually already died a couple hours earlier.
Wow.
There was no telephones or anything. So they died on the 4th of July, by the way.
What?
Yeah, on the same day, on the 4th of July. And they were both legends in their own time. They lived – to like 1820.
But they came back together. They were friends
from
again.
From 1776 to 1820, they were like – for real, people are coming to, you know, Jefferson's house. And, I mean, if you could go talk to, it'd be like if Abraham Lincoln had survived in the 1890s and 30 years later, you want to go talk to him about the Emancipation Proclamation. So that's happening in this time period. Anyway, I love that. I think that's what makes America exceptional, is they had differing viewpoints, but they both had this sense of honor for what the nation was that was bigger than, right. than any one of them,
yeah.
and that they could even reconcile and even laugh. There's a lot they wrote to each other laughing about. I mean, running against each other for president and things, laughing about it. So I just read a book that's about Bush Sr., about George H.W. Bush, written by George W. It's a 2014 book. And he wrote a book, and one of the reasons was, is someone told him, you know, you're the only – you're the second time in American history that the son of a president yeah. has also become president. And John Quincy Adams never wrote a book about John Adams. He wanted to, but he never did it. Like, you should write about your dad. Like, this is an amazing right. American history thing. So it's amazing to hear about, you know, George H.'s – he was shot down, you know, yeah. in the Pacific and – all these things about this guy, you know, is a fascinating story. The director of the CIA, you know, how that happened, is all the elections he lost, all those things. And it was great to hear his son just really dote on him. Like, yeah. he was so proud of his dad, you know, and it was great. And he kind of tells the whole story. But the best part of the whole book at the end is George H. was a one-term president
mm-hmm.
who was beaten by who?
He was beaten by Clinton.
Yeah. And so him and Clinton, obviously, and it killed him, by the way. George yeah. H., no, he didn't show it as much.
Right. But
just like John Adams, it killed him. And he went, you know, for a while. And of course, immediately George W. got into politics and became the governor. And then Jeb became the governor, you know, of Florida. And so he had his kids and other stuff and grandkids to deal with and all those things. But it was a blow to him. You know?
Yeah.
Because he had the highest approval ratings of any president in history at that moment, especially after the Iraq War. But the economy took a downturn.
Right.
And the economy, by the way, his changes to the economy had actually already began the uptick. They have the data, but it happened basically.
Just too late.
It was too late in the election for them to it was right before the numbers came out, like a week
right.
before election.
And Clinton gets credit for it.
Right. And so
that's the way it
that's
is.
How economic cycles work. I'm not saying Clinton didn't do a lot of good as well for the economy. I'm just saying.
Why do you love Clinton so much?
But the deal is, the guy who beat him later on in life, Clinton became great friends with George H.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Barbara called Clinton, like, oh, that's just our other son. He would go hang out in Maine with them all the time, and they would laugh. And then, you know, they did the whole when Katrina was one of the times, and,
yeah.
And then the tsunami. George W. asked Clinton and his dad to please come together and to raise funds.
Right, so, I remember this.
And that's how they became friends.
They did all those
friends.
PSAs together.
Yeah, all those PSAs. They
people couldn't believe it. They were like, what are they doing?
Yeah, and they started traveling together.
Mm-hmm.
And so they literally buried whatever hatchet might have been there between them politically and became friends to the point that he's hanging out at dinner and stuff. And they, like, laugh and love each other and have, like, this great relationship. And that's when I go, whether or not that's only in America, I'm not sure. If I was going to say only in America, like I said, it's not because of the general essence of America is better. Maybe because there is a system from our foundation that is – it'd be very hard in other countries for that to happen because they don't have that system in place. It might happen now. There's yeah. a lot of democracies. But, I mean, historically,
right.
it's almost unheard of that the leader of the entire nation that's ousted by another person
– right. They're
now
going
ousted
to be
peacefully,
friends.
And they go on to become friends because yeah. they see the greater good. I just – to me, that's like the coolest – and they didn't – by the way, he didn't make that connection in it. I just happened to read – you know, Jefferson and Adams, and then saw this with Clinton and Bush and going, oh my gosh. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing that throughout history we have a nation where that can happen.
Maybe there's hope for us. Maybe we'll go on to be
friends and bury the hatchet.
I mean, you think it's time?
I don't know, Johnny. This blood feud, it actually gives me energy.
That's good. That feels good.
And listener, we hope that our talk has given you energy today.
But I really doubt it.
Yeah.
Well, it's been informational.
It was. It was a 4th of July episode, kind of. You know, we were talking
America.
About our nation. Yeah. What's going on? And here's the deal. I want to make a post-claimer.
I don't like this.
No, I just think it's important for us to know. There is, just like a tweet, just like a Facebook post,
yeah.
even just like a book, there is no chance that Johnny and I, as we flew through 100 different topics today that are all hot buttons in American culture and history right now, that we were able in this time to give a complete, you know, 360-degree viewpoint that brought in all sides. You, there's no doubt. You were like, yeah, but – and if that
one, already, they've already written their angry tweets,
and
John,
if that one thing that we didn't say is the most important thing to you, it's not because we don't think it's important. It just means
– it means get your own podcast is what it means.
It's a dialogue. So
get your own podcast and rail about stuff there.
So we don't claim to have all the answers.
We don't.
Hey, I do think I want to take care of children who are in trouble.
Hey, I
don't care where they are, who they are. I'm going to take care of children in trouble when we can, because I believe the gospel calls me to do so. Let's be citizens. But I do think God blesses us. But when we say we're going to run out of money, Johnny.
Yes.
As a Christian, I don't believe that.
I don't believe
that. I believe my God has all the resources he needs, and the resources in my hands are his. I'm going to do my best to take care of people.
Do the right thing.
Yeah. So, but that being said, there is a political side.
Oh, my God.
There is a political side. Let's just make sure. For me, Johnny, I want to be a believer first. So, hey, hopefully we may have lost all of our listeners
today. It's fine. We'll have other podcasts.
Yeah, we'll talk about this. It'll be the next one.
Ooh,
we'll start.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a spinoff. So, but we do hope you share, and hopefully it made you think. We had some people over the last 2 years tell us, like, I never would have thought like that, or I wouldn't have endured that viewpoint.
Yeah.
If you guys hadn't talked it out and I hadn't been willing to listen. So
we seem like reasonable people. Yeah. They're like, well, listen for a minute.
Listen for a minute. And that's kind of that's really what American exceptionalism is we're willing to listen to one another.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. John, you put a bow right on this.
I brought
thing.
Them all back around. So, except Johnny's worried about a van pulling up and taking him off with no windows, apparently.
Bro.
It comes up a lot. Windowless van's a phrase I hear out of your mouth a lot.
It's my worst fear.
Pastor Roy has a windowless van.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. Maybe he's a part of the...
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No.
But it's also got a Mickey Mouse sticker on it.
That's so diabolical.
You get thrown into a van with a Mickey Mouse sticker, you're like, well...
I don't know where I'm going.
Here, have a popsicle. It's like...
That's weird.
As we take off to our interrogation. All right, hey, make sure that you share and give us more questions, stuff you want us to talk about. And we're just very grateful we get to do this with you. And we'll see you next time when we
talk about that.
I'm Billy Yancey, entrepreneur, fitness cowboy, father, retired Navy cornerback, and now podcast host. Listen to my new show, Billy and the Goat, on Life Audio. Happy listening.